Welcome to the Soldier for Life podcast, where we share information and resources for our military and veteran families, from employment and education to health and wellness and Army retirement. We're here to help you learn more about programs and resources that are available to our Army family. The information shared in this podcast does not constitute an endorsement by Soldier for Life, United States Army, or the Department of Defense. And now, let's get started with this week's episode. Welcome to the Soldier for Life podcast. It's great to have you all with us today. As always, I'm your host, Colonel Jared Thomas. We've got a great episode coming your way, so let's go ahead and get started. Our discussion today is one that is vitally important to every employer out there who wants to hire and retain veteran and military-connected talent, which, listen up, employers, should be all of you, because hiring veterans and military spouses is one of the smartest things a company can do. So today, we're going to talk about what you can do to up your military-connected talent game and why this is so important. Our guest on the podcast today is Ms. Lisa Rosser, an Army veteran who spent 22 years in the active Army and Army Reserve, and who now works with companies to help them understand the immense talent that veterans and military spouses bring to the table and build and grow their own military-connected talent programs as the CEO and founder of an organization called The Value of a Veteran. Lisa, it's great to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you so much, Colonel Thomas. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm excited to share some information with your audience.
No, we're looking forward to it. We're going to talk more about your background and what brought you into this space in just a minute. But I want to start out our conversation by diving right into one of the most important questions I want to talk about today. Why should organizations hire veterans and military spouses, and what makes them so valuable to employers?
Yeah, it's a great first question. And what I talk to employers, one of the first things I remind them of is this is not something that's charitable. It's not something that's the patriotic thing to do. It is a business imperative. When you talk to CEOs, and there's so many organizations that do surveys of, you know, what keeps the CEO up at night? One of two things always rises to the top. It's either going to be people or it's going to be cybersecurity. So people issues are number one or number two for every organization out there. And a lot of times it's like, we need more talent. We need skilled talent. We need talent with soft skills. We need talent where the jobs are. We need talent in some of these really hard to fill type of roles. We need talent in these remote locations where there isn't a lot of other people, you know, necessarily willing to come, let's say, work out in the oil fields or work out in these other places or in these expensive cities where our offices are. So if you can solve a company's talent problems and you can do it with the high quality talent that comes out of the military, it's just one more avenue or resource, if you will, another talent pool to tap into that most companies don't think about that. You know, they're thinking about college grads and they know how to recruit from universities. They know how to recruit just by posting jobs on Indeed and things like that. But they don't know how to develop a strategy to take advantage of all these different populations. And of course, we advocate for military. That's a huge talent pool that they could be going after, and they just don't even know that that is something they could consider.
And that's a great point. The you know, when you talk about a huge talent pool, you're absolutely right. You know, as someone that served just like you did for, you know, over 22 years, you know that each year there are a lot of soldiers leaving just the Army alone. I mean, from all three components, we have last year alone was 132,000. From the active, the guard, and the reserve, you know, that talent pool is there. And then I think what you're explaining now, they are looking for talent that can bring something to their organizations as soon as they arrive in the organization. And your organization is great in helping with them understanding, hey, there's another talent pool out there that we can pull from to bring, you know, that talent into our organization. So I really appreciate what you do on that.
And there's like, you know, it's not even just transitioning military.
Right.
Because oftentimes when people, you know, first start to think about recruiting military, they're like, oh, I need to go to the Army or the Navy bases or wherever and start recruiting. It's like, yes, that is a talent pool. Like you said, about 130,000 people will come through that talent pool. But we have those who are already out. We have those who are in the National Guard and Reserves. We have student veterans. We have military spouses. We have veterans with disabilities. We have veterans who have been formerly incarcerated. We have all these different little subpopulations that can also be added to the larger, you know, military talent pool. And so, again, it just it makes sense to go after folks that already have great skills and who are trainable into something else if they need to be, and who come with great soft skills. And so why would we ignore a potentially large, talented pool if we knew that it existed and how to leverage it?
So what are some of the characteristics that soldiers bring to organizations?
Yeah, sure. So I think, again, a lot of times employers don't know that all these skills exist in the military. What they know of the military is what they've seen on TV. It's like you kick down doors, you blow things up, you run things over with tanks. You know, that's great, but that's not exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a machinist. I'm looking for an operator. I need a supervisor. I just need people with good managerial skills, or, you know, something in a hospital setting. I need these different clinical type roles. So one of the first things we do is explain to them that, you know, 81% of the jobs we have in the military have a direct or very close civilian equivalent.
Right.
So, you know, we have to have all of these jobs in the military to function the way that we do. But we may call it something different. So again, it doesn't always jump out at you on the resume that that's actually what this skill is, or the systems that we use. Let's say we have somebody who works in a maintenance shop and they procure parts for the maintenance shop. Well, their job title probably doesn't read exactly the same way that everybody else's does. And the system that they use to do that procurement definitely doesn't sound like anything that the civilian world uses. But again, if they had a moment to sit down and kind of actually have a conversation and to go, okay, so tell me what that system does exactly. And then they show you how they use it to procure parts and, you know, forecast shortages and all this. Like, oh, okay, that basically sounds exactly like this system that we use. Yes, it does. And I didn't know how to use that system when I joined the service. Mm-hmm. The military had to teach me how to use that system, but I picked it up very quickly. So you teach me, or if you're willing to teach me this system, I bet I could become a parts procurer for you very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, great. You know, so we want to make sure that they understand that. And then other things that we educate them on is, you know, when someone joins the military, they didn't already know how to fix a tank, but they learn it, they take the test and they identify that this person has mechanical aptitude.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to teach them, you know, one of these arrays of types of mechanical type jobs. So they are trainable in that sense, that if what the job that you need them to perform requires them to do some level of maintenance, some level of diagnostics, some level of testing and, you know, quality assurance on it, they could learn that very quickly versus taking somebody off the street who has never done this work, who may not have mechanical aptitude, and trying to teach them how to do this job. So that's one of the things that, you know, the military has already kind of proven is this person is trainable, and they're trainable in the skills that they have. The other thing we emphasize is the soft skills. I think they call it something different these days, but the softer skills of leadership, that's a big one. It's like the military teaches leadership from day one, from the day that they start basic training and onward. They're learning leadership without sitting through a class that's called Leadership 101.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning how to communicate up and down the organization. They're learning how, you know, what integrity means and how it's employed in everyday situations. They are learning how to, you know, take care of others and how to motivate people to do things when they don't want to do things. And the military is teaching them that every step of the way as they're teaching them their job and taking them out on exercises and eventually, you know, maybe deploying somewhere or doing all these other jobs. They're learning these skills. So you take the average 23-year-old coming out of the military and compare them to the average 23-year-old who just graduated college, and it's a world of difference.
Right.
You know, whether one has a degree and the other doesn't have a degree, the level of maturity is different. The level of experience that they already have is different. How they, you know, work with others and how they develop into a team and become a team member and eventually hopefully a team leader is very different oftentimes than what you're getting with just sort of the average college grad.
I mentioned at the start of the show that you are an Army veteran yourself. What brought you into the military talent space and led you to create your company, the value of a veteran?
So I started in 2007 when the veteran unemployment rate was in the double digits. Right. And at that time, the media conversation around this fact was, you know, on the one hand, oh my goodness, you know, we need to do something to help these service members, these men and women who have served our country. It's the right thing to do. Again, it was sort of emphasizing the patriotic and right thing to do. But then out of the next, you know, breath, it would be, you know, but gosh, they don't have college degrees. They don't have marketable business skills. They don't have this. They don't have that. They might have illnesses or injuries. And so I'm listening to this. And it's like, that's not the military I know. Again, right. You know, at that point, I had about 16 years of military experience. I ultimately retired after 22. And I had been already working in the human capital space when I was a consultant for a major Fortune 500 company. So I was like, that's not the military I know. Mm-hmm. I think we're really not telling the right story here
right.
about the skills that come out of the military. So maybe I'm in a good position to kind of be that translator to people who don't know anything about military service, don't know how we come to be in the military. How did we come to be a tank mechanic? How did we end up becoming, you know, this, that, or the other? And explaining it all to them in a way that makes sense in plain English, but that also shows them how we can address some of their talent challenges. So again, if they've got high turnover, if they've got, you know, any of these other issues that they're dealing with, okay, let me show you how veteran talent can address each one of these issues. And so it's, you know, again, why wouldn't you want to take advantage of this?
Right.
Let's just show you how.
So what kind of work does the your organization do to help companies hire and retain veterans?
So the first thing I tell every company is I don't have a single veteran for you to hire. My job is to teach you how to fish.
Right.
And in order to fish, first, we have to do some preparation. So a lot of it is sort of assessing kind of what their talent needs are right now and what it's going to be, you know, potentially into the future. Like, is there a merger coming up or a massive period of growth coming up, or is your industry changing? You know, so we have to kind of assess that portion of it. And then it's like, okay, what are the jobs that need to be filled? And is that a job that is needed right now, or is that coming in the future? What's the volume that needs to be hired? And so we kind of look at it very analytically. And then it's like, will military be a good fit for right. these types of roles? And sometimes it's like literally a one for one. You need a phlebotomist. Great. We have phlebotomists in the military. And sometimes it's more, you know, you have to kind of nuance it a little bit. Well, we need more managers and supervisors. Okay, great. We have that too.
Right.
So let's look at how we would approach that. Or it could be, we need engineers, but they have to have college degrees because of some requirement. Okay, then now we need to look at doing a student veteran program. You know, so mm-hmm. we look at it and kind of analyze the bigger picture. And then we show them, you know, if you had the perfect strategy, here's all the components it would include. But we can't do the big picture right out of the gate. So let's pick something mm-hmm. that's going to get you some results quickly and prove that this is a good, you know, good route to take and a good way to, you know, focus on this. So we'll pick something, you know, maybe it's some kind of machine operator or, you know, something that's easier for them to grasp, and then say, okay, let's go and let's develop the strategy around that. How do we find this talent? What ways, you know, can the government assist you with finding this talent? What ways are there other, you know, opportunities out there to find it? And then let's build the strategy around that. And let's look at your marketing and what kind of imagery are you using and what language are you using?
Right.
And does it resonate with service members? And then we teach the recruiters and the hiring managers how to interpret military service. How do we read mm-hmm. that resume that doesn't read like everybody else's resume?
Right.
And how do we have a good, productive conversation with a service member, especially one just transitioning?
Right.
Because again, they don't necessarily have the right language just yet. Maybe a veteran does because maybe they've been out for a while, but currently transitioning may not. It's like, so how do we have a good productive conversation with this? And then once we bring them into the organization, of course, we spend all this time, money, and effort to bring them in. We don't want to lose them in 6 months because we're not being supportive of this transition process. Or maybe they're in the Guard and Reserve and our Guard and Reserve policies mm-hmm. are non-existent or right. terrible or whatever. So we have to look at all of that. So that's what my company does, is all of that kind of background legwork to help them build a strategy that actually works and is productive and takes advantage of every, you know, government system that makes sense for them to take advantage of, like, you know, MSEP for military spouses. If that military spouses could be a good channel for you, mm-hmm. then let's develop it and let's learn how to take advantage of this. Or if there's programs like DoD SkillBridge or the Department of Veterans Affairs Special Employer Incentive, if those programs make sense to incorporate into the strategy, we help them understand why it works, what the benefit is for that, and then put them in touch with the right people to build that end of the strategy. Because again, a lot of employers are like, I don't even know the words coming out of your mouth. what's SkillBridge? What's SEI? What's, mm-hmm. you know, WOTC? What's the blah, blah. It's just mm-hmm. crazy to them. And it's like, I understand that. And so I'm going to explain it to you in simple English and then show you why it should be part of your strategy.
No, I'm glad you're serving as a translator as well, because sometimes we we know how to talk to ourselves, but we don't know how to really explain what we're doing to someone who hasn't experienced that. So I think that's incredibly important mm-hmm. and a critical factor that needs to be done if we're trying to communicate with those that have never served. So really, really appreciate that. So if I'm an employer, mm-hmm. What can I do to up my military talent game? What do I need to do to start or grow my military talent, and what resources are out there to help?
So one of the things that I try to really emphasize with people, it's like, don't go at this just throwing spaghetti at a wall. Mm-hmm. I talked to three people and they said I need to go to military bases. So I'm just going to go to random military bases with no, mm-hmm. No strategy whatsoever as to what kind of talent is coming out of that base. If I'm looking for dental people who make dentures, it doesn't mm-hmm. make sense to go to any other military base than the Air Force right. base in San Antonio, because that's where they are. Going to the Coast Guard base in Rhode Island is not it's not going to help right. you find that talent. So they don't go in with a strategy. They just kind of randomly try a lot of different things, or they go to the first shiny object that comes down the pike. And so somebody may say, oh, this vendor over here, has all these job fairs or this resume database or whatever it is, pay them $50,000 and they'll essentially pipe you full of resumes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it doesn't matter whether they actually can deliver on that or not. If you don't know how to read them, if you right. don't know how to, mm-hmm. If your applicant tracking system is kicking them out as soon as the resume comes in,
right.
you just wasted $50,000. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you have to stop, slow down, take a time to do some of this analysis and some of this strategy, and then figure out what to do first. And then that's, that's kind of where we come in. And we help baby step people through this, because not everybody's mm-hmm. ready, right. To divide into this and just like, yes, whole hog, let's do this. Mm-hmm. So one of the things like we do, certainly we do a number of different kind of live webinars where we're just doing some general, complimentary education out there. But then again, we are a for-profit company, so mm-hmm. we have different services people take advantage of. One of which just concluded, actually. I run an annual conference called the Veteran Recruiting Conference, and we brought together, I think it was about 45 or 50 companies, all major Fortune 1000 ones you would have heard of. Right. And they're there to learn how to do this. And whether they're brand new, about 40% of our attendees don't have a program or are like just kind of trying to figure it out right now. And the other 60% or so have either, 1 to 3 years of a program, or maybe mm-hmm. one that's a little bit more mature. And so they're looking for more advanced kind of topics, or how can I leverage my ERG, my employee resource group, to help me? Or, what can I do with military spouses? Or we want to expand our program, basically. And so that's what we do, is a lot of knowledge sharing, and try to make sure that everybody understands, that there are good ways and not so good ways to do some of this stuff. So we want to help people with that.
No, that's good. And so, with that being said, what are some of the biggest challenges that employers face when it comes to hiring veterans and military spouses? And what are some of the more common mistakes that you see companies make with their veteran program?
So I'll start with mistakes first. So I actually even did a LinkedIn article on top 10 mistakes that I see companies mm-hmm. make. But probably number one is like just not going in with a strategy. And so mm-hmm. You can't prove results if you don't have a strategy. It's like, okay, I went to 10 military bases.
Right.
Great. How many hires did you make? Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't make any hires, or how many resumes did you bring back? Well, I didn't bring back too many resumes. Well, then why did we just spend all this money
right.
sending you to all these things? Because people don't understand the transition process. And it's like, you're going there to establish a footprint, to talk to service members. And yes, they might be 6 months away or 12 months or 18 right. months away mm-hmm. from actually leaving the service.
Right.
But you want to talk to them now and you want to kind of get them in your pipeline and you want to continue to educate them so that that way, when they are ready to leave the service, you know, if you needed them to get some kind of a license or certificate, maybe they could have taken advantage of some of the internal, you know, training programs to get those certificates, or whatever it is that you need them to do, they could have done that. And now they're ready and they're a more qualified candidate to apply for these jobs. It's like, but if you're treating this like every other job fair you've ever been to, mm-hmm. I go to the job fair, I came back with 50 resumes, 15 of them applied and 5 of them were hired. Mm-hmm. That's how people measure. And it's like, that's the wrong thing to measure. So already you're making mistakes right out of the gate. So don't do that. And then the biggest challenges, I think, with employers is, again, they don't understand all these different programs, and they don't understand that there's, you know, sometimes some big differences between what kind of talent is available, let's say, coming mm-hmm. out of the Army versus out of the Navy versus right. out of the other services. And so they, again, just, oh yeah, I've got a military base right down the road. Like, well, and again, that might be a great place or it might be a terrible place, depending mm-hmm. on what kind of talent you're looking for.
No, great point. And so what are some of the best ways for organizations to connect with veteran and military spouse talent?
So there's just so many ways. And that's why we try to help them, you know, understand that there's different options depending on what they're looking for. We do, you know, certainly appreciate the efforts that, like, you know, the DoD SkillBridge program has put together, but also all these other programs offered by the Department of Veterans Affairs and others. So it's identifying kind of which ones would be appropriate
right.
to start with, and making those introductions to the right people at those organizations and saying, okay, you know, if building a SkillBridge program is one of the things we've identified as a good thing to do now, because maybe it may not be good now for some companies. You might have to wait a year or two and then you'll be mm-hmm. ready for that. But other companies are like, no, I think you're ready. So we can do that. There's so many nonprofits out there that have, you know, the mission of helping service members mm-hmm. to employment.
Right.
We strongly recommend that they, you know, reach out to their local career one-stop centers, the Department of Labor mm-hmm. employment offices, and you know, speak to the right people there and find out if there's, you know, service members in those databases that are looking for employment. There's all kinds of ways they can, even if they're just using Indeed or mm-hmm. any other kind of online job board. You know, again, certain language, certain marketing techniques work better than others. Advertising on Facebook actually works pretty well if you know mm-hmm. how to do targeted advertising. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways to connect with talent.
What other advice would you give to employers who want to build and grow their veteran and military spouse programs?
So a lot of it, again, is think big, but start small. So what's going to get you the most bang for your buck? Because when you go through all this effort to build a program out, we don't want you to lose your program because there might be whispers of a recession or, you know, something's happening and we need to cut back. We want your veteran program to be protected as much as possible because you're already showing the value that it's bringing to the organization. So they wouldn't dare, you know, they wouldn't dare cut your program. Because a lot of times with companies, especially big ones, and I typically work with larger companies, like their university recruiting program never is touched when you know, there's whispers of a recession mm-hmm. because they see the value
right.
in that. They know what they're getting out of that. So I think that's part of it, is really defining the value, defining what are the right metrics to track, mm-hmm. and then how do we show what we've done? How do we show the ROI for the effort that we've put in so that people aren't just expecting it to be tracked the way that every other program, for example, is tracked, so that you really can show the value for it.
No, and I think that probably is the key, being able to explain, like you said, the value of the veteran, but then also mm-hmm. to show, you know, the data that supports that. I think that is critically important and reasons why they probably want to continue to work you know, with you and others that help in this space.
Yeah, and even sometimes, like, you know, when you think about something like, let's say, for example, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit.
Right.
While it's not just a veteran tax credit, there are several categories on mm-hmm. there for veterans. And again, there are, you know, compared to like any other population you might be trying to recruit from, we qualify for some of that. And mm-hmm. so again, if you're recruiting smartly and you're, you know, doing what you need to do and you're tracking administratively all the things that you need to track, and you come back and say, okay, you know, we hired, let's say, 100 veterans this year out of the 1,000 positions we filled this year, 100 of them were veterans. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe, you know, five times more than they've done in the past. Okay, great. We were able to leverage tax credits for some percentage. It saved us $50,000. Mm-hmm. By doing this, we took advantage of this program, and that saved us this amount of money. We took advantage of the VA's special employer incentive program, again, just for veterans with disabilities. So that has to be a strategy. Mm-hmm. And that saved us X amount of dollars in payroll for 6 months. And you start putting these numbers up, and it's like, there's no other population that you're trying to recruit right now that actually saves the company money in the process of recruiting them. So don't you dare touch my budget. Don't you dare touch my program.
No, that's great. So we focus a lot, you know, on the veterans, but why is military spouse employment important? And what else can and should companies do in this space?
So not that anybody could ever say anything great came out of COVID and the pandemic, but one of the things that it certainly highlighted mm-hmm. was, gosh, a lot of positions can be done remotely.
Right.
Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the first things that I thought of when, you know, all that was going on. It's like, oh, you know, now we have no more excuses, right? To hire not only military spouses who benefit tremendously from remote work, but also veterans with disabilities for whom, you know, getting to the office might be quite an ordeal, mm-hmm. you know, for some of them. And it's like, okay, so I would think that we now have no excuses to not look at these particular two talent pools. And say, okay, what can I do to include them on this? And so again, we go into some of the explanation on our spouses. It's, you know, about 95% women. Mm-hmm. We talk about the, you know, the education levels, the training, the resiliency, the flexibility, and all that kind of thing. And the fact is that their resume is going to read a little bit differently than perhaps what you're expecting. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason for that. So let's understand what we're looking at here. Don't dismiss it out of hand. And if you see that they've had 10 jobs in the last 15 years, don't look at that as like, what's wrong with you? Look at that as like, wow, she has managed to stay employed mm-hmm. every mm-hmm. single time she's changed a duty location. That's crazy. That's amazing, right? So you have to know what you're looking at and interpret it correctly to be able to take advantage of this great talent. And it's just one of those things. And then guess what? Military spouses know other military spouses. You develop your own pipeline. And guess what? They're married to the military. So now you can start developing your transitioning military. Pipeline as well. So it pays benefits to pay attention. Again, it's just another talent pool. We call them like sub-demographic of military talent. There's just another demographic you could be taking advantage of, especially if your company does have more remote roles available.
That's great. And I talk about this all the time. You know, we live in a time where many of our military members, they live in dual income households. And when it's difficult for a military spouse to find employment, that impacts a soldier's decision on if they're going to stay mm-hmm. in the military or decide to, separate from the military because it's so difficult for their spouse to find employment. So anything that helps spouses not only find employment and make a career that can travel with them as well, mm-hmm. it benefits soldiers and helps to retain, you know, some of that military talent that we're looking to retain as well.
Absolutely. And yeah, like you've got a military spouse, so let's say they know they're CPA or they know accounting or whatever, mm-hmm. but the town that they've now been relocated to with their service member, maybe there are not so many jobs there for someone of that particular skill set. Yeah. And so, yeah, what's the opportunity? It's like, well, I guess I could go work for the, you know, local retail establishment or Starbucks or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and if you're looking for something super flexible, maybe that's the right answer. But if no, I'd like to still be working as a CPA, mm-hmm. then it's like, why couldn't you work for Wells Fargo or, you know, CVS or one of these big companies that needs CPAs and has remote opportunities? It's a win-win for both people.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. So Lisa, how do people learn more about the value of veteran and how can they connect with you?
So the website's really easy. It's thevalueofaveteran.com. And it lists on the homepage our six service areas and the things that we do to support employers. So folks can learn about each one of those areas and connect with us or download material if that's available. I always encourage people to just at least schedule a call. You know, do mm-hmm. a little quick 30-minute call. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're working on. If there's anything that I can offer you as advice, you know, right then and there. For programs that might make sense for you, I'm going to offer you advice. I never like anyone to get off the call having not received some kind of information that's helpful to them. And again, I can do that really quickly. I've been doing this for, it'll be 18 years in June. So wow. Doing this a lot, I have this information off the top of my head. So I just love to be able to give a little bit of advice. But if folks then are actually looking for assistance, then it's like, okay, well, let's see what might make sense for where you are right now with your program and what you've already tried to do and whether or not that's worked. Are we looking to just expand? Are we actually looking to completely start over because nothing we're doing at the moment is delivering results? Okay, great. Then let's see where I can help you with that.
So we're just about running out of time for today's episode. Is there one last thing that you would like to talk about before we close things out?
Again, I just encourage employers to look at this and don't look at it like, oh, it's too hard. I don't understand all this at all. You know, all these organizations sound the same and, you know, I just don't get the value of doing this. I don't need someone to come in and kick down doors and blow things up and run things over with tanks. It's like, if I ever need that, you'll be the first person I call, but that's not what we need right now. And it's like, you don't get what we do. So please allow me a moment to explain to you what's actually going on here. And that might change your mind because very rarely do we encounter any organization with any hiring need that we don't either already have that skill in the military or we have something that's really close. And maybe if you put together an on-the-job training program, skill bridge, apprenticeship, a something, we could actually get that person to 100% very quickly compared to hiring somebody else off the street that doesn't know anything about how this job performs or leaving a job open for 6 months or 9 months because you can't find the person who already knows how to do that work. The company could have trained them in 3 months, but it'd rather leave the job open for 6 or 9 to find someone who already knows how to do this. And it's like, that's dumb. let's not do dumb things.
Right.
Help us help you. Help us to help you develop a pipeline. Help us help you, you know, build your own talent and grow your own talent. It's so much better than leaving jobs open unfilled because we don't know what else to do. We keep doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Right. Well, Lisa, this was a great conversation. We really appreciate you joining us today to help employers learn more about why and the how when it comes to hiring and retaining military talent.
Again, I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to further conversations with you all. And if anybody wants to schedule a call, just go to thevalueofaveteran.com and we'll go from there.
Hey, thank you once again to all of our listeners that were tuning in today. Please be sure to follow or subscribe to the Soldier for Life podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. As always, I'm Colonel Jared Thomas, and I'll see you again next time. Once a soldier, always a soldier for life.